The title that we chose is The Story of the Zukunftskolleg. And in fact, there is not one story. So selecting the story, which story? Right, the story of the fellows, the story of the senior fellows.
So many stories. The story of the jour fixe, our weekly meeting. The story of the Y building that has been built and where the Zukunftskolleg has a home. The story of so many babies that have been born to the fellows in the Zukunftskolleg. The story of the central office, this wonderful group of people all on part-time contracts and full-time involvement into the Zukunftskolleg that really make this place possible. The story, so many stories, but the most important story, where is the microphone? Yeah. Daniel, you have the microphone. The most important story is the fellows. And so I would like today to start with... Yes. Doris, so you joined the Zukunftskolleg in 2008. And what is the beauty of the Zukunftskolleg?
Well, I've been at the Zukunftskolleg for almost as long as it exists. I've been here for 9 years, and in my time at the Zukunftskolleg, I've seen many people come and go. And what is important for me at the Zukunftskolleg is also being part of a community of fellows, of other junior researchers who are in a similar stage of their career and who often struggle with the very same problems as I do. And to see that many of them have been successful and have found their place in academia is very encouraging for myself. So if I'm to choose one crucial aspect of being a fellow at the Zukunftskolleg, for me it's being independent, being able to focus on my own research project, but importantly at the same time not being left alone. So being part of a community, being integrated into the community of fellows and also receiving the institutional support of the Zukunftskolleg and most importantly of the central office, who makes my daily life as a researcher just every day a little bit easier.
So which story of the Zukunftskolleg to tell? We have selected a few of them, the story of how the institution evolved within the university, about opportunity in academic careers, the fellows, and we will run through these in the next 45 minutes. How did we create further opportunities? At the beginning, if you think 10 years ago, 15 years ago, the observation was that careers, the first independent position, the first position where researchers can do their own and self-dictated, self-chosen research comes fairly late. So the idea was to create a place where independence in research can start very, very early. And one person who certainly would have loved to be here today, unfortunately cannot be here, is Gerhard von Grevenitz, and I think it's fair if I get the mouse.
Wir haben an eine junge Universität gedacht, was kann sie am besten vorzeigen, und das heißt die wissenschaftliche Jugend. Nachwuchs ist an sich kein schönes Wort. Kommt hinzu, dass die Universität Konstanz die besondere Aufmerksamkeit auf ihre jungen Forscherinnen und Forscher richten will. Das gilt für Doktoranden, das gilt aber vor allem für die Postdoktoranden, im Übrigen strukturell die schwierigste Gruppe, weil sie alte Assistentenstelle, Drittmittelstellen, Juniorprofessoren und andere Dinge die heterogenste ist und auch am wenigsten Interessenvertretung im Grund in der akademischen Welt hat. Da will Konstanz was unternehmen. Deshalb hat es dieses Zukunftskolleg eingerichtet. Das fing mal 2001 mit dem Forschungszentrum für den wissenschaftlichen Nachwuchs an. Also das ist ein etwas behäbiger Titel. Zukunftskolleg ist zwar nicht exakt, aber auf jeden Fall eingängiger. Und das war gar nicht so leicht zu gründen, aber es ist dann zu einer Erfolgsgeschichte geworden. Denjenigen, es könnte sein, dass es das noch gibt, dass jemand noch nicht weiß, was das Zukunftskolleg ist. Es ist eine der zentralen Einrichtungen, mit der wir in der dritten Förderlinie gepunktet haben. Es geht darum, 30 Postdoktorandinnen und Postdoktoranden mit offener Ausschreibung, internationaler Ausschreibung, 5 Jahre idealer Arbeitsbedingungen zu geben, sodass sie dann wirklich berufungsreif, berufungsfähig sind. Sie haben zum Beispiel an Herrn Jochum, der nachher der Dialogpartner von Herrn Kirchhoff ist, ein erfolgreich berufenes Mitglied. Ich habe mehrere ehemalige gesehen, die alle vor dem Ablauf ihrer 5 Jahre ihre Professuren bekommen haben. Das heißt, die Grundidee war erfolgreich und wir sind jetzt eben in der glücklichen Lage, 30 Positionen, Fellowships aus Exzellenzmitteln bezahlen zu können und dann noch ein größeres Coaching-Programm, wie das Neudeutsch heißt, das will ich jetzt nicht im Einzelnen erläutern.
So, thank you, Gerhard, for his comments. This was in 2009 at the Heidelberg Academy of Sciences and Humanities. And this brings us into the timeline. As you already heard, the rector, the predecessor was the Zentrum für den wissenschaftlichen Nachwuchs. We will hear more about the history, the early history. The Zukunftskolleg was founded 2007. This is why this year we have the 10-year celebration. 2012, the renewal. And in fact, this year, and the rector alluded to that, we also had the application for the excellence strategy for the clusters so far. Let's look a little bit, what did the referees say when they read the application of the university for the Zukunftskolleg? I found this one passage, and the translation is again on this side here. Das Zukunftskolleg sei geeignet. This is the language of referees, right? They speak in sort of spheres, I don't know. Das Zukunftskolleg sei geeignet, die schon jetzt hohe Attraktivität der Universität für Nachwuchswissenschaftler weiter zu steigern und die internationale Sichtbarkeit der Universität zu vergrößern. That was 2007. So we'll have to see what they said 5 years later in the renewal application. Die Maßnahmen zugunsten des wissenschaftlichen Nachwuchses, insbesondere Young Scholar Fund und Zukunftskolleg, hätten sich positiv auf die Universität insgesamt ausgewirkt. I don't know why referees cannot say haben sich, but that is a form on, in the German language that they don't know. Die Fellows des Zukunftskollegs erführen große Unabhängigkeit und Unterstützung auch durch die jeweiligen Fachbereiche. That was 2012 in the renewal application. And this year there was no application yet for the Zukunftskolleg, but only the application for the excellence clusters. And still, in their comments, the referees mentioned that, and this is for different clusters, insbesondere, dass der interdisziplinären Zusammenarbeit gewidmete Zukunftskolleg gefällt sehr gut. It should be gefiele sehr gut, but never mind. Dass sich, but then it's in square brackets, so we can't excuse that. Dass sich vor allem an Postdoktorandinnen und Postdoktoranden richtende Zukunftskolleg der Universität Konstanz ist etabliert und bietet viel Raum für interdisziplinären Austausch und die Förderung des der wissenschaftlichen Eigenständigkeit. In fact, the language has changed a little bit. Maybe that is what means to be part of the establishment now, the language of the referees. So, at least from the outside world, the Zukunftskolleg has received that appreciation and acceptance. The person I would like to ask now is Elke Scheer, who is in Paris for a sabbatical, and therefore we've got a picture, and we go beyond the picture. And what I would like to do is to ask Elke, in which regard has the Zukunftskolleg and its forerunner, the Zentrum für den wissenschaftlichen Nachwuchs, really created a new structure?
Well, the ZWN was founded in a time when there was really not so many structures dedicated to the support of young scientists in that critical career phase. And I think in that sense it was really, really important, and also one of the first ones.
Yeah, because it gives some framework. It's not just we help you when you have problems, but it makes it in a more concentrated and organized way, in a reliable way, building structures in a situation where structures are missing. This was also the time when the traditional career path of habilitation was about to be replaced by alternatives like heading a junior group, let it be a Minöta or from other funding agencies. And so it was quite a period of lack of structure. And I think this was exactly where we then jumped in. And other institutions have taken up ideas from the Zukunftskolleg. I think there's no copy really of the Zukunftskolleg, but ideas went into other structures. It has some similarities to what was known of Advanced Studies Institutes, giving freedom to researchers, but what we knew at least about existing Advanced Studies Institutes was addressing more senior scientists and not these explicitly young scientists that we have here in our Zukunftskolleg.
So Elke, you're saying that it has given structure. In what sense did it give structure?
It gives structure by itself, so that there is an organization that that says there is a group of scientists, or there is a phase in the life of a scientist that had no name up to now. They are students, they are doctoral researchers, they are professors, and there is something vague in between, and having a home for this population, so to say, this gives already structure. This is the first aspect, that it is considered being a group inside a university. And the second is that there are also these regular meetings and means for support and for exchange. And it's a way to meet the people and to come into contact without having to pass over high barriers.
Thank you. So Elke Scheer is a professor for experimental physics at the university, and in fact in that the beginning time, 2003-2009, she was a director of the ZWN and beginning of the Zukunftskolleg together with Gerhard von Grevenitz, and also together with Thomas Breuninger, who was a fellow in the ZWN and is now professor for political economy at the University of Mannheim. So, Thomas, I'm very happy that you are here and that you can tell us a little bit, if you think back of those times, right, the early ZWN time, how did the fellows live? What was that kind of a time here at the University of Konstanz?
Well, I should say at the very beginning, we really started from scratch. Yeah, so I was, or I entered the ZWN in 2001, a couple of months after it was founded. And I still remember when I first met Gerhard von Grevenitz. It was the time where we did not have workshops to select fellows, but it was actually fellows that were recruited from within the university. So people in a postdoc position that had, well, from an outside perspective, achieved something. And that achievement was that you had to attract third-party funding, a grant of reasonable size. So that was the key criteria that you were admitted. And I met Gerhard von Grevenitz, and I didn't know what the ZWN at that time was. Well, actually, I think many people didn't know, since there was a blueprint of that thing. There was a plan, there was a vision of some people within the university, but it had not materialized so far. And when we met, he asked me, well, now you have that Eminöter grant, and you have that fellowship, that stipend to go abroad for 2 years. So is there anything we can do for you? And I said, and I was really kind of naive, and I was a young, and I feel very old now, I must say, after 15 years, and potentially I am old. So I said, well, it would be good to have access to the library in these 2 years. And he said, well, that should be possible. But apart from that, is there anything else we can do for you? So in terms of, I don't know, seed money, research money, travel money that you would need to foster and to so that your research makes progress, the best progress you can think of in these 2 years. And I said, well, let me think about that. And I went home, and two days later, I came up with a bunch of ideas, obviously. And I was given seed money, in fact. I was given travel money. It was not a huge amount of money. But the mere fact that someone came to me and said, well, what you're doing seems to be good. And we support that. And if you need something, let us know, and we will see how that goes. That was the most important thing. It was even more important than the money itself.
And then later came the Zukunftskolleg, and this idea of the Zukunftskolleg was also discussed within the group at the Zentrum für den wissenschaftlichen Nachwuchs. How was that idea received?
I think from the perspective of the fellows, to some extent it was a natural way to go. So we all knew that we were built to some extent on shaky grounds, obviously. I mean, the
money for the ZWN was granted by the university for an experiment. That's perfectly fine.
So you have to see how things go. And then when there was that big chance to apply in the Excellence Initiative for a chunk of money where we could build up that institution and expand. That was thrilling. And what was in particular thrilling was the idea that we can really attract people from outside, not just having people from within the university, but attract people from outside internationally. To bring in people who work on topics, and that's the very idea of being independent, who bring in topics that have not been dealt with at the university before. So people that are just brilliant and have brilliant ideas, and then let's see how that works. I mean, that's obviously different in different disciplines. So in the natural science, you need a lab to do certain stuff, so it shouldn't be too different. But in the humanities, in the social sciences, we could actually attract people who have been doing really independent research in areas that have not been in the departments before.
Thank you. We move on, and I would like to thank Jochen Nettelbeck. Jochen Nettelbeck was the secretary of the Wissenschaftskolleg in Berlin, and he was also the chair of the Scientific Advisory Board in the very first years of the Zukunftskolleg, 2007-2012. And I think really one of the thinkers of the Zukunftskolleg together with Gerhard Thun-Gerlenitz. And therefore I'm very, very happy that you have taken the effort to come here and to tell us a little bit of your story of the story in the Zukunftskolleg.
Thank you. So there are two considerations I want to present you about those discussions we had in the prehistory of the Zukunftskolleg. First, hierarchy in German academia, and second, how to cope with the marginal situation. Well, it's a bit serious, but I think it was really the basis for the Zukunftskolleg, and it maybe will be also important for the future.
Of course,
celebrating 10 years of Zukunftskolleg
is an ambiguous
situation, an ambiguous endeavor. At this occasion, you expect the past to be praised, as we have heard. But your name, Zukunftskolleg, obliges you to look into the future based on a critical evaluation of your past. This tension is part of this university in general, as the rector has explained. It can be praised for its excellence. However, it will only maintain this status only if its future is evaluated to be promising. So maybe these two considerations might also concern the future of this university and the Zukunftskolleg. Hierarchy. In my view, hierarchical structures are among the most important hindrances for scholarly creativity in the German system of higher education and research. If you talk to the young German scholars who make their career in the US and ask them why they don't want to come back, you quickly discuss hierarchy and the position of the German professor. Hierarchy frustrates young scholars. They feel hindered in their, what is the poor, they feel hindered in their curiosity and imagination. But their chutzpah, their courage to ask new questions are essential sources for new insights. From the point of view of institutional design, hierarchical structures are so difficult to tackle because, to a certain extent, they are unavoidable and useful. Hierarchy is a tool of an efficient bureaucracy to allow for quick decisions and to avoid controversies. Convincing by arguments is time-consuming. It's the basic mode of functioning. The basic mode of its function is of hierarchy is order and obedience. And this is opposed to discussion and conviction, the basic mode of scholarship. However, also in the academic world, hierarchy is unavoidable. As far as there are decisions to be taken about rare resources, like money, positions, diploma, or prizes. Committees and participation smooth it down, but don't make hierarchy vanish. And it is a ubiquitous phenomenon. Hierarchical structures penetrate all the veins of the system. They are traditionally strong in Germany, but also the worldwide organization of science has developed a multitude of administrative routines and institutions reinforcing the weight of hierarchy. Peer review, for instance, might be the best of all the deficient procedures of decision on persons and projects, but it emphasizes the weight of the mandarins, has the tendency to create a kind of feudal order. International journals ideally allow for a worldwide discussion of arguments, but they have mutated to a ritual within this feudal order. Everybody has to publish, even if nobody can read all this anymore. Third-party funding may be an appropriate way to expose plans of a university to external judgment, but they can also end up in a situation where financial considerations dominate scholarship. Such structural effects of hierarchy are often hidden in rankings. Publications and third-party funding become norms of the feudal order that the young scholar has to obey to. That is why institutions have to be designed as such that they mediate between these contradictory facets of hierarchy. They have to provide freedom to the scholars at the same time as to take responsibility for the necessary hierarchical decisions. The Zentrum Wissenschaftlichen Nachwuchs, für den wissenschaftlichen Nachwuchs, seemed to me to be an adequate institution to reduce the weight of hierarchy in favor of young scholars. And apparently, this was the right university for it, as the rector talked about the flat hierarchies in this institution. Was it this conviction of mine that made Gerhard von Grewitz ask me whether I wanted to join the Beirat of the Zentrum für den wissenschaftlichen Nachwuchs? I don't know. But I know that it was the reason why I agreed immediately. This Zentrum seemed to me to be an exemplary institution. Young scholars employed by the faculties were partially protected from the pressure of the guardians of hierarchy, the faculties. In a multidisciplinary community, they could pursue their own ideas. Serendipity got a chance. they got the opportunity to organize their academic life by themselves. And as you expressed it, they were not left alone. The rector Gerhard von Revenitz protected this creative environment. And Elke Scheer, whom we have heard, was an intellectually demanding director, but she was not normally in the role of the supervisor, but she was demanding. My overall impression was that the Zentrum provided an open institutional space where young scholars could pursue their own questions without neglecting the reality of the hierarchical order of their disciplines. Allow me a short remark in between on Gerhard von Revenitz, because he was really the founder of the Zentrum and for the Zukunftskolleg. It's really an enormous pity that he has left us and can't participate in this nice event. He was a kind of grand seigneur mit einer souveränen Haltung. He didn't need to demonstrate his competences or his formal position. He could listen to others and encourage them in their own intentions, as you have explained. At the same time, he was an authority, filling the role of a president of a university under German conditions in an exemplary way. He succeeded in mediating between the university and the surrounding society. His authority protected the university from external pressure and at the same time provided internally acceptance for justified societal demands. So it was a great pleasure to listen to him again. At the first meeting of the Beirat, we were confronted with the intention of the ministry to reduce the subventions for the Zentrum drastically. I was shocked. There is a university tackling the problem of hierarchy in academia in an original way, but the responsible ministry apparently didn't understand the precious value of such an initiative. They just did what they normally do. They looked for an opportunity to reduce costs. Following the first meeting of the Beirat, the ministry afterwards cooperated nevertheless, once more, once less willingly. Apparently, the authority of Revenitz was at work. Each time an obstacle arose, he picked up the phone and discussed with the ministry, primarily not with the minister himself, but with the administrators. By this attitude, they felt respected and became less reluctant. In midst of these conflicts, the Excellence Initiative opened up new perspectives. The institutional setting could be enlarged and strengthened by federal money. How the founding of the Zukunftskolleg was possible within the university, I don't know. Others, Frau Scheer could inform you much better. I just want to add one consideration which might have had little attention, but which we discussed at length. How could the Zukunftskolleg help to compensate for the marginal position of the University of Konstanz? It might be shocking to talk about marginality in the case of a university which has attested excellence. However, by its environment, the University of Konstanz isn't in a marginal situation. Of course, the quality of a university is determined by the quality of its academics. This was the basis of the success as well of Konstanz as of Bielefeld. However, and in contrast to many other creations of universities for just regional reasons. However, in the long run, locations prove to be more easily successful, which can offer rich cultural and intellectual environment. Maybe you call it the Bay Area effect or the Cambridge effect. Such concentration of talent attracts the best minds, and the Matthäus principle works. The film reassures funders. As a consequence, in a marginal position, it is a difficulty how to provide procedures so that the new professors will be as good as the founding fathers. The patriarchal structures of faculties entail, once created, the danger to conserve, as already Wilhelm von Humboldt has called it, einen gewissen Geist. The university has to develop procedures and institutional settings struggling against this danger of resistance against new lines of research. Therefore, it was very important to foresee to address candidates from all over the world, from any discipline, and to select the fellows for the Zukunftskolleg as independently as possible from the faculties. If the attraction of candidates and their selection is well done, one can hope that they will convince, these fellows will convince their disciplinary colleagues that it is worthwhile to accept a speciality or a subject which hitherto had not been part of the faculty. Of course, the better candidates would come from fields for which this university has already a certain renown. But even in established fields, new tendencies need a period of free development for becoming convincing compared to vested interest. Having an institutional space for free inquiry for young scholars and aiming at the new fields and talents to be attracted to Konstanz were for me the two points of the discussion during the founding period I wanted to emphasize. This might also provide a link to the future of this university and the Zukunftskolleg. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Jochen Nettelbeck, very much for these words. Even though some of them might be shocking, Konstanz marginality. Anyway, maybe there is some marginality, and if that is so, we have to do something about it. So in 2012, we applied for European money to get an international crowd of fellows into the university. Right, so we had the start of the CIF program co-funded by the EU. Now that program, we had to apply for it and we had to justify why the European Union should give money in the co-fund project to this, what do you say, marginal university. And one really crucial help there.
I talked about a marginal situation, not about a marginal university.
A key help in that application was Stephanie Preuss from the research support. And I would like to ask you, Steffi, if you think back on that application, and if you think of these, let's say, bureaucrats in the EU, how easy was it to convince them that this is a good idea?
Well, what was not difficult at all was to convince the reviewers that the Zukunftskolleg was actually worth being funded by European money. And we applied for more than 6 million euros, which is quite a lot for a fellowship program funded by the EU. So the reviewers were very positive and the reviewers were very enthusiastic about the Zukunftskolleg, and they specifically highlighted the interdisciplinarity of the Zukunftskolleg and also the independence that the fellows get in the Zukunftskolleg. What was a bit more challenging was to convince the bureaucrats or the administrators in the EU to make the very strict rules of European funding fit the more flexible and open rules of the Zukunftskolleg. So Giovanni Galizia and I went to Brussels and negotiated with them directly, which was, I think, a very good idea to talk to them directly because they're all just people after all. And we negotiated with them the rules, how we could make the Zukunftskolleg rules fit the EU rules. And we found a solution, and I think in the end, both the European research landscape and also the Zukunftskolleg benefited from that program. And we got a lot of international fellows come to the Zukunftskolleg, to that marginal place here at the Lake Constance, and which is also one of the aims of European funding.
Thank you. And another point, Jochen Nettelbeck, that you made was about the structural effect that the Zukunftskolleg has within the university. And so I would like to maybe come back to Thomas Breuninger and ask you, since you have left Constance and are now in Mannheim, and there you also have institutional tasks, are there any aspects of the Zukunftskolleg that you have sort of taken with you and that you think that you could implement or realize within the University of Mannheim?
Mm-hmm. Well, when I moved to Mannheim, I got the honor, or how you want to say that, I don't know, to become director of the graduate school, which is also funded by the Excellence Initiative. And possibly that's the drawback when you come out of an institution like this and you have experience in running an institution and building up something new, that you get another job that is basically roughly the same. What I learned and what I really took over to Mannheim was the idea that what we in Constance called transdisciplinarity is an important thing. That is that people from very different disciplines come together, present their research in a way that others from other fields can understand what they are doing. Sometimes it happens that you realize that you have similar questions, that people use methods that have not been used in your own field, but that could be useful, so there's a transfer of methods. But also in terms of substantial research. So what we have fostered quite a lot in Mannheim is that econ students and business administrative students take classes in psychology and vice versa, that political science students take classes in econ and so on and so forth. Since I really believe that this pays off in terms of research, but also from a wider perspective, in the very end, we are not just training the next generation of young scholars and Nobel Prize winners, we are also training the next generation of academic leaders. And people in a university, in an academic environment, have to understand that there are smart people in other disciplines as well, and that other disciplines are useful, and what they are doing, and to understand and can communicate. That is an important thing that people have to learn. And that is, for instance, something I really believe in, and that is something I learned in Constance, and I took over.
Thank you. So within this scheme, we have this aspect of interdisciplinarity, among other aspects that you took over there. So the story of how we created opportunities, the story of how then also the Zukunftskolleg entered the life, the daily life of the university. And I'm very glad that we have Dirk Leufen here, Vice Rector for Research and Academic Staff Development. Dirk, you joined the university in 2009, sort of, 10 something. The Zukunftskolleg was already there. And my question is one that is preceding your role as a vice rector. So you arrived at the university had its Zukunftskolleg. Did you see it? What did you think of it?
Well, I need to be honest. Delicate question. When I came in 2009, I was acting as an interim professor here at the University of Constance in the Department of Politics and Public Administration. And to be very honest, I didn't know about the Zukunftskolleg. I was too busy preparing my 9 semester Wochenstunden at the time, so I didn't really look right and left. When I finally arrived, I got a post that I'd never expected to get, actually, and I arrived in early 2011. That's when I actually encountered the Zukunftskolleg before it's Zurich at ETH, I was encountered by I met the Collegium Helveticum, so I was sort of a great fan of such institutions. But when I got here, I met the Zukunftskolleg through the calls, and then every autumn when the calls are out in the field, you as a professor receive numerous emails from around the entire world with a very different quality, because they search for local hosts. And to some you say, well, I'm interested, and then at the third or fourth, I always say, no, I can't assist five of them. I need to sort of rank them, and I wouldn't want to do that because I've promised to support some of those already. So that's when I sort of met the Zukunftskolleg, and of course I'm acquainted and I've been in close contact to some of the researchers of the Zukunftskolleg, but mostly from my own department. So I've been working with Ulrich Sieberer or talking with him, whom I met, of course, at Mannheim before, and I had one, Edina Tricic, who was a fellow for whom I acted as a host. So that was the contact that I had.
So one of the aspects of the Zukunftskolleg that I think is also important, the independence, interdisciplinarity. But the history, the rector alluded to that, 50, 51 years of the university and the Zukunftskolleg, there is a story of the university that is very, very in the structure of the Zukunftskolleg. If you look at this plan of the university, that is a plan from 1970, and the idea here, maybe even this one is interesting, the idea when the people at that time were thinking how to build a university. If you want a reform university, if you want a new way of doing research, right, what do you need? You need communication, you need meeting places, and you need to put people together. In fact, there were even ideas to have the dormitories of the students together with the professors. That part has not been realized. I'm not commenting on that. But the very basic idea, to have a core of communication. The Mensa, the lecture halls, this one, the entrance, and all the departments around it, so that communication across all the disciplines is not just something that is possible, but something that is enforced and visible in the architecture. That was then realized. This is not exactly the way it was built, but it's already very close to it, right? You have the center area of the university and all the other areas of the university around it. And so in a way, what we live in the Zukunftskolleg is we take over something that is at the very core of the spirit of this university. But of course, what we live is now, what we are doing today is to celebrate the 10 years, but it's always also an obligation to think about what's happening next.
Although I was arguing that now the Zukunftskolleg is established, it's not established in the brains of everybody, so its necessity is not seen by everybody, I would say, because at other places in Germany this does not exist, and their young scientists also survive somehow. But personally, I sincerely believe that here in Konstanz they survive better than elsewhere. They have more support, they have more visibility, they have better chances to develop by getting co-funding and support. But this is still an unsolved problem, that it is kind of special, and in that sense it's not really a structure, because it does not appear yet in any Grundordnung of the university or so. It's still something that is kind of explorative.
So in this dialogue, Dirk, what do you think? What is the role of the Zukunftskolleg in the strategy of the university?
So I'm glad you asked me for the role and not for the budget, because Jens Abels is here, so he'd be the person to talk about that. But the role, more seriously, so I didn't complete actually my sentence. So in my office, I became a closer member of the executive of the Zukunftskolleg, and I've learned a great amount of things from the Zukunftskolleg. Now, looking at this, I would say the role of the Zukunftskolleg is really that it's a laboratory for different things that we do at the university. So your five eyes are really telling, and I think they build a sort of a nucleus or a microcosm of the university. So it's a laboratory, of course, for the academic staff development, but also for the interdisciplinary aspects of our university. And it's so small and so, and I mean that positive, unstable, that it's sort of changing always a little bit, as the university does. So I learn a lot how to do research, how different disciplines should interact, how to evaluate grants from different disciplines, and sort of feel what the youngsters think, what research is all about, and why they want to do that, and why they want to be here. So I think it's a great learning ground for the university.
Thank you. We have seen now these five I's: independence, intra-university, interdisciplinarity, internationality, intergenerational. In several aspects, you've seen them on the wall. There's one I that is missing, and maybe I would like the into society. And as an example of into society, I'm very glad that we have Norina Prokopan here, who is teacher at the Humboldt Gymnasium, because the fellows of the Zukunftskolleg do a regular meeting with students of the gymnasium, of different gymnasiums, of different schools around Konstanz in the area, and organize sort of teaching days. And what I would like to ask you is, how do the students from high school, how do these pupils react to coming to the university and working together for a full day with the fellows of the Zukunftskolleg?
Ja, einen schönen guten Tag. Sie werden wahrscheinlich nachsehen können, dass ich jetzt Deutsch spreche. Ich habe eine kurze Ansprache vorbereitet, aber ich würde dennoch spontan auf Ihre Frage reagieren wollen. Gestatten Sie mir ganz kurz das Hegau-Bodensee-Seminar vorzustellen. Das Seminar wurde vor ungefähr 15 Jahren im Landkreis Konstanz gegründet. Das ist ein Seminar für Schüler der allgemeinbildenden Gymnasien. Schüler können an Arbeitsgemeinschaften teilnehmen, die einmal in der Woche stattfinden, und außerhalb dieser Arbeitsgemeinschaften gibt es weitere Angebote, und zu diesen Angeboten gehören eben auch die Universitätstage, die ich vor 10 Jahren einführen durfte, als ich die Leitung dieses Seminars übernommen habe. Zu den festen Angeboten des Hegau-Bodensee-Seminars zählen noch Autorenlesungen. Seit 32 Jahren gibt es am Humboldt-Gymnasium auch eine öffentliche Vortragsreihe. Und wie gesagt, vor 10 Jahren habe ich mir überlegt, wie würde es mir gelingen, Schüler für Themen zu begeistern, die nicht im Schulcurriculum verankert sind oder eben nur marginal. Und im Zusammenhang damit wurde ich auf das Zukunftskolleg aufmerksam gemacht. Und seit 10 Jahren haben wir jetzt als festes Angebot des Hegau-Bodensee-Seminars eben diese Universitätstage zu sehr unterschiedlichen und selbstverständlich interdisziplinären Themen. Sie erwähnten, dass Schüler einen ganzen Tag am Universitätstag des Zukunftskollegs teilnehmen können und zusammen mit den Dozenten arbeiten. Und tatsächlich, das ist ein Format, das ich in Absprache mit Frau Lohan, mit der Koordinatorin des Zukunftskollegs, entwickelt habe. Also wir haben das zusammen entwickelt. Wir haben uns überlegt, wie können wir Schüler für Inhalte interessieren und nicht für eine einfache Präsentation der Universität, wie können wir Schüler vielleicht auch mit der Arbeitsweise an einer Universität vertraut machen, und wie können Schülerinnen und Schüler auch einen Einblick gewinnen, wie Forscher arbeiten. Und wir sind eben zu diesem Ergebnis gekommen, es wäre tatsächlich sinnvoll, dass sie selber auch aktiv werden und in 3 oder bis 4 parallel laufenden Workshops arbeiten Schülerinnen und Schüler unter der Betreuung der Dozenten oder der Fellows des Zukunftskollegs. Und diese Ergebnisse werden dann am Ende eines Tages vorgestellt. Ich darf vielleicht an dieser Stelle noch darauf hinweisen, dass dass nicht allein Schüler des Hegau-Bodensee-Seminars an diesen Universitätstagen teilgenommen haben, sondern im Laufe der Jahre ist es uns gelungen, auch Schülerinnen und Schüler aus anderen Seminaren in Freiburg oder in Mannheim auf die Themen aufmerksam zu machen. Und Sie fragen, wie die Schüler, also was die Erfahrung dieser Schülerinnen und Schüler gewesen sind. Ich habe immer noch Schüler, die auf die Universitätstage hinweisen und sich sehr gerne daran erinnern. Und wenn mich die Erinnerung jetzt nicht täuscht, das sind Schüler, die inzwischen auch Studenten der Universität in Konstanz geworden sind. Insofern bin ich sehr dankbar für diese Zusammenarbeit mit dem Zukunftskolleg und wir freuen uns jetzt auf den nächsten Universitätstag am 8. November zum Thema Vorhersehbarkeit. Ich wünsche dem Zukunftskolleg alles Gute und nochmals herzlichen Dank.
Vielen Dank. Vorhersagbarkeit. The core element of the Zukunftskolleg are the fellows and the research projects. So when afterwards you go outside, you will not find an empty space, but you will find many, many posters. Different posters from different fellows that will cover all sorts of disciplines that are currently present in the Zukunftskolleg. And I would like to ask you to take your time and look at a few of these posters, discuss the research content, discuss the questions that are being asked, and try to find out what is it that is happening here. And as a sort of teaser, I would like to get you to use these things, and Tilman will take over.
Okay, so I'm Tilman Trippan. I'm Tilman Trippan, I'm a biologist, and I'm interested in complex locomotor behavior. And my model organism is Drosophila melanogaster. It's the fruit fly. I think most of some of you might know them from your kitchen. And what I'm going to show you is like quick introduction into my main research experiment. So there are three things you need to keep in mind for that. The first thing is these flies are, oh yeah, I probably need that. The flies are really tiny, so they are about 2.5 millimeters long. Then the behavior is really quick, so the videos will be slowed down 10 times. And the third thing is, to actually get them to cross these gaps, I actually need to clip their wings to confine them to the area. Okay, let's see if that works. You can see there are two flies, both of them try to cross the gap, and now you actually have to decide. And for that, you have this interesting box here. You first need to press the OK button. And then you can see on the slide over there, there are three different options. The first is the flies will cross the gap. So both of them make it to the other side. The second outcome that could be is one fly makes it to the other side, but the other one makes a mistake and then falls down. The third option is just, again, one fly crosses, goes to the other side, and the third one just gives up and turns back to where it was. So once you've pressed OK, there should be something there, and then you just press the number. Ah, yeah, you can already see it go up. The number of your choice, what you think is going to happen. So we just wait for all the answers to come in.
Now we know how many people are here.
So we have to make a guesstimate how many people there are. I think that the numbers are stable. Okay. So let's continue. What will happen next? And okay. unfortunately, with your... Okay, you can see one fly tries very hard and then falls down. You can see, surprisingly, there's a pretty homogeneous distribution. Okay, so that was just a very quick and simple teaser. If you want to know more and want to know more about details, what I'm working on, just find me later at the poster. Thanks for your attention.
Good afternoon. My name is Maria Cruz Berrocal. Should I? I have to do it. Okay. And then here. Well, it's not very informative, I'm afraid. So I'm just going to say a very brief, very few sentences about what I do, the archaeology that I am doing in Taiwan in the last 6 years. But first, we will begin with the question. And so you have to decide if you agree with this statement that the American colonies were the most important colonies, the most relevant colonies for the Spanish crown back in the early 17th century. And so there you go. You just vote. So what we are doing is we are excavating the premises of the former Spanish colony in Taiwan, in the northern part of Taiwan. So can we see the results right away, or we... Okay, yeah, well, I guess you see a little bit where I'm heading to. You all know that the Philippines and the Mariana Islands were Spanish colonies until the end of the 19th century. So indeed, this part of the world, Asia-Pacific, was key for the Spanish crown and for Europe, actually, back then, because here is where the global economy that shaped the world afterwards emerges at this time frame in the 17th century, beginning in the 16th century and in the 17th century. So these are well-known enclaves, colonial enclaves. You know about them, but you don't know about Taiwan probably because this is a hidden history. This is lost history. And I think the reason is because historians apply teleological thinking, and because Spain failed at the end in the colonization and establishment in the Pacific, people assume that the beginnings were also marginal and irrelevant for the Spanish crown, and that's not the case. The Spanish crown put a lot of effort in Taiwan at that time. They built a star-shaped fortress, which is European style, totally trendy at that time, and they made also a church that we have been excavating, made of stone, which is Spanish style and which is totally unremarkable today still in the Iberian Peninsula. You can see them in any village. It is monumental in the context of Taiwan. So it really shows how the Spanish were really trying to get hold of Taiwan because it was strategic. But then we have these historiographical twists in which we lose track of what really happened, and we are trying to disentangle the real history and recover the role of Taiwan at that time and in that period, in that region, sorry. And we are also excavating, there we go, we are excavating the cemetery, which was completely unknown, but it's found next to the church. And this allows us to open a new avenue of research in the Pacific, because this is the first time ever that European burials have been excavated in this region. And we are performing DNA analysis of humans and pathogens. So we are aiming to set up a new field of research which studies the European migration into the region, but also the impacts of this migration in the local populations in the form of disease transmission, hybridization, etc. So this is the very Christian guy we excavated last year, because you see he had the hands crossed over the chest. So that's a very Catholic gesture in Bari. And that would be it.
So, thank you very much, both of you, for these short introductions. As I said, outside there are more posters, so you get more about the different research projects that we have here. The stories of our fellows. We had 99 fellows so far, so if we start now, then we will have several hours to go through. We had 48 senior fellows, a strong component if you look here in our intergenerational thing. The fellowships, the 99 fellowships are distributed, there are 38 female fellows, which is in that career group above average. We had some controversies about the way we split the genders, but I would not go into this right now. But please, if you feel offended or not, or have a strong feeling, come and see me later, because some people just didn't mind, others were negatively addressed by this, and it's important to have some feedback there. We have a strong component of international fellows, 58%, also thanks to the EU program. Many faces, many people. I would like to close the session by asking two of our fellows to tell us a little bit about what they think about the Zukunftskolleg. Jennifer?
Yes, thank you very much. I often get the question, why Constance, right? Because I was in the US for several years, and I even was thinking about staying there. But then for family reasons, I came back to Germany. Constance was actually not about the beauty of Constance, because I have to confess I didn't know where it was. And it also was not about Thomas, who now is my partner, because I met him during the selection process here. It was actually because of the clinic in Schmieda, since this was really important for my research, and the Zukunftskolleg that supports interdisciplinarity. The Zukunftskolleg has really amazing programs that we can use and apply for. And one of the programs is, for example, the intersectoral program that made it possible for us to have, I have to tell you a little bit about our research to make it a little bit more plausible. We are doing neuropsychological research, motor cognition. We are working with stroke patients. We are developing diagnostic tools in our lab here at the university, and also therapeutic strategies. And of course, it doesn't make sense if we just develop these things and do not make sure that these can actually be applied in the clinics. And the Zukunftskolleg, with one of its projects, helped us basically to implement this in the clinics. And it was pretty successful. We had a publication out of this, and the feedback in the clinics were very positive. And that's just one example of the so many examples in the Zukunftskolleg. Then, of course, the Zukunftskolleg literally means family to me. And we would like to thank you for all the opportunities that we got so far, and that they are still waiting for us. And we wish the Zukunftskolleg all the best, and hopefully many more years. thank you very much.
Gianluca?
Hello. Yes, I'm Gianluca Vastelli. I'm a research fellow at the Department of Physics, and maybe I can shortly tell you my story at the Zuko. I like to define it as an adventure, because really I didn't expect to reach this point, to stay here today, in the sense that in 2012, after my postdoc in France, I moved here. I really was motivated to start as independent research and to develop my ideas, and then to finish collect with the ZIP program was really the best environment. And that, so I mean, it was I mean, I also applied for some grants in 2014, I guess. I applied for the RISC grant. I got it, and then I continued this experience for the 5 years. And in the meantime, I also try to exploit the best the support measures here, because I think they were really important. For instance, I applied, for me as a theorist, was important to establish new connection and to get in touch with other experts to start even novel topics, which sometimes can be a bit risky because you don't know. This is why I applied for the mentorship program, and then I was able to visit a professor in the US, at the University of Yale. So there was a great collaboration. This professor then came here and, as a senior fellow of the ZUCO, and beyond the scientific output, now this research topic became one of my research interests that I'm continuing to work on it. And indeed, the last year I wrote a grant for the DFG, and it was successful. It was really unexpected, so I was really happy. And I think it was really a great adventure, the experience, and what's also to mention the support of the university, because I attended the training course about how to improve writing a successful proposal for grant. That was Stephanie, I guess, that was the trainer. And even the support of the department, I would say yes, because especially Professor Belzing and encouraging me to form my independent group and also to be PI of the collaborative research center that we have at the physics department and so on. So really fantastic experience. Maybe it's exaggerated, but it's true. Thanks.
So Elke, I see you're here. Elke, you've put a lot of work into this. Was it worth?
Well, this has, of course, two aspects. One aspect is, was it worth for the Zukunftskolleg, and was it worth for me? And I think I can answer both aspects with yes, because I think the Zukunftskolleg is really a good thing. It worked out. It lives now for more than 10 years, and it develops. And I think a lot of young scientists have really profited from being there. And in that sense, it was worth it anyway. But it also was worth it for me, because I really enjoy this interdisciplinary atmosphere there. I think I would never ever heard or attended really attentively a talk by scientists from completely different disciplines. And so I learned a lot personally, and I learned also a lot about the do's and don'ts in these other disciplines. And this is something that helps me now as well, because I'm involved also in other interdisciplinary committees or so. And it is worth, but no doubt about it.